It's Thursday, January 21st, and this is VOA's International Edition. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Coming up, global markets slide on slippery oil prices.
Taiwan administration also wants to reassure Beijing so that Beijing will not start trying to exert pressure on Taipei.
Taiwan's newly elected leaders and Beijing begin to assess relations. Also ahead, hashtag VOA looks inside the capture of El Chapo. And two superstars team up for one great show. It's all on today's International Edition. Falling oil prices, China's economic slowdown, and a pessimistic outlook for the overall global economy this year sparked yet another sell-off of stocks on global markets. U.S. indexes fell 3.4% or more in Wednesday's afternoon trading. Stocks in Germany fell 2.8%, while key indexes in France and Britain dropped nearly 3.5%. Earlier in Asia, Tokyo's Nikkei index fell nearly 4%. Hong Kong's Hang Seng dropped 3.5%, a little bit less elsewhere. While U.S. markets made a tremendous rally late in the day to close just over 1% down, oil remains a huge question for investors. Prices for U.S. oil fell below $27 a barrel. That's the lowest mark in 13 years after the International Energy Agency issued a report warning that global oil markets could drown in oversupply as demand plunges. Tyrell Bossoni is senior oil market analyst of the Oil Industry and Markets Division of the IEA in Paris, and she talks about what has happened to the price of oil with VOA's Ira Melman.
The drop in oil prices from over $115 in mid 2014 to below $30 currently has clearly started to slow down global oil supply growth. What we're seeing is that oil production is still outpacing demand, and oil continues to pile up in storage tanks all over the world. What we're saying is that while the growth in non-OPEC supply has slowed from the record highs that we saw in 2014, we're still the impact of lower prices on supply is taking time to filter through, and we're still producing more oil than we consume. So in what we're seeing is that despite this sharp slowdown in growth in non-OPEC supplies since 2014, overall the market balances are not looking much better in 2016. We're forecasting non-OPEC production to decline by 600,000 barrels a day this year, but still, as OPEC's biggest producer, Saudi Arabia and Iraq, continue to pump oil near record rates, we do not see them backing down from the policy to defend market share, supplies will continue to exceed demand for some time to come.
What about the addition of Iran? Now that the sanctions have been lifted, they're estimating, 30 to 50 million barrels of oil from Iran? What's that going to do to further complicate the situation?
So as the sanctions, the lifting of the nuclear sanctions on Iran were very much anticipated to come in sometime early this year. But as you say, Iran's return to the market that complicates the picture, and it adds even more downward pressure to an already oversupplied market. So we believe that Iran has made considerable progress in preparing its oil network and lining up buyers for its oil. And we think that they can add about 300,000 barrels a day of additional crude to market by as soon as the end of the first quarter. And our estimate is that Iran has about 34 million barrels a day of condensate stored on tankers offshore, and they will want to clear that overhang as quickly as possible.
That lowers prices even more, is that correct?
A lot of the impact of Iran returning to market, we believe, has already been priced in to the market. It was highly expected. And so it doesn't come as a surprise.
Geographically, what are the hardest hit areas as far as lower oil prices, even if as they continue to get lower? What does it mean to the economies of these countries in these areas?
Oil producers in Africa, Venezuela, Nigeria, Angola, the Middle Eastern countries, where they have a very high portion of their their national revenue is dependent on oil prices, it's clearly very difficult. We're seeing Russia was not only hit by lower oil prices, but also by international sanctions last year, and the Russian economy is in recession.
Well, investors are also growing more pessimistic after China's announcement Tuesday that its economy grew 6.9% in 2015. Now, for most countries, that would be pretty good, but for China, it's its slowest full-year growth in 25 years. It's time for us now to check out what people are saying online about the market plunge. To do that, International Edition's G. Abby Lee is right here in Studio 22 to tell us what's buzzing online about all of this. G, hi.
Hi, Jim. This is the situation in a nutshell. Crude oil prices in the U.S. fell 6.7% Wednesday to below $27 a barrel. Like you said earlier, that's the lowest figure since May 2003. And that dealt a big blow to all the major U.S. stock indices. At one point, the Dow plunged more than 560 points. The S&P 500 and Nasdaq slid more than 3% respectively. So not the best scenario for investors, but Twitter users are finding humor even in the darkest of the trading times.
Well, that's certainly true. Why don't you give us an example of what you saw?
Sure. One user with a handle @GasBuddyGuy wrote this tweet. Dinner for two at Olive Garden, now more expensive than a barrel of WTI crude oil. But at least there is unlimited breadsticks. For our listeners outside of the United States, Olive Garden is an Americanized Italian chain restaurant here, not really known for tasty meals, really, and the WTI stands for West Texas Intermediate, a grade of crude oil used in a benchmark oil pricing. And I'm sure many of our listeners heard about it referring to crude oil prices in the news along with the Brent crude oil. Jimmy, turns out the man who wrote the tweet is a petroleum analyst with an app called Gas Buddy that compares gas prices in the country.
Okay, well, I like Italian oil better than crude oil. I think I've heard of that app or something to that effect. And, you know, the main stock indexes fell sharply with many people going on selling sprees. But, gee, there are always some buyers who tend to take advantage of the lower prices, right?
Absolutely. And that's precisely what's different about what happened today. The market has been going in one direction only since the beginning of the year, and that's down, down, down. Usually when this happens, bargain buyers jump in to buy the shares at discount prices. Now, these guys usually include sovereign wealth funds who can afford to wait out the volatility for decades and reap the benefits. What's different this time is that the sovereign wealth funds are also under pressure. Many of these funds are built on oil fortunes, and when the oil prices plummet, of course, they also suffer. So it's a vicious cycle. Before I go, I want to add that biotech and chip makers supported the tech-heavy Nasdaq index, erasing the 3.7% plunge seen earlier in the day. Back to you.
Well, that's a lot for traders to think about. Thanks for that wrap-up, G. And you can find her on Twitter, @GAbbyLee. And she also tweets from our International Edition account, @VOA_IE. You can follow me as well, @VOA Stevenson. This is VOA.
The news never stops, so keep current on your mobile device with VOA News. Just go to m.voanews.com/English for instant, up-to-the-minute news and entertainment. Check m.voanews.com/English on your handheld device for news as it happens. Stay connected with a fast-changing world with m.voanews.com/English.
Do you lead a busy life? Not always able to catch your favorite VOA radio or TV program? If you are keen to stay in touch with world news and events, give VOA podcasts a try.
VOAnews.com.
Visit our website at VOAnews.com to learn how you can become a subscriber to VOA podcasts and keep your life up to date.
VOA News, your trusted source for news and information.
This is VOA's International Edition. The Secretary General of Taiwan's victorious Democratic Progressive Party, Joseph Wu, said domestic issues such as food safety, health care, pension reform, and housing costs drove voters on Saturday to reject the ruling nationalist KMT Party of President Ma Ying-jeou after 8 years. The KMT has ruled the country for most of the past 66 years. On Saturday, former law professor Tsai Ing-wen became Taiwan's first female leader, getting 56% of the vote. She'll be taking power on May the 20th. The DPP also won 68 of the 113 seats in parliament, and that gives it legislative control for the first time ever. Joseph Cheng, a China analyst at Hong Kong University, tells VOA's Victor Beatty Wu's remarks are intended to reassure both Washington and Beijing that Taiwan's new administration will do nothing to provoke China and will remain stable, if not cordial, cross-strait ties.
The Taiwan administration understands that the United States doesn't want her administration to rock the boat. And at the same time, this message would also send reassurance not only to Beijing, but also to the business community in Taiwan. The concern on the part of the DPP is to prevent the kind of scenario which emerged in the previous DPP Chen Shui-bian administration, which caused worry in Washington, D.C. about serious deterioration in cross-strait relations leading to American involvement, which is undesirable from Washington, D.C.'s point of view. The new Tsai Ing-wen administration also wants to reassure Beijing so that Beijing will not start trying to exert pressure on Taipei.
Mr. Wu said that building trust between mainland China and Taiwan would be a, quote, step-by-step process. What does he mean?
Beijing has to take steps to ensure that the cross-strait dialogue will lead to the enhancement of strategic trust at the government level and also basic trust between people on both sides of the Taiwan Strait. On one hand, Taiwan people are concerned, are worried that close economic and other exchanges across the Taiwan Strait may bring undesirable effects on the ordinary life of Taiwan people, like too many tourists, like Beijing's business interests begin to affect the position of the mainstream media in Taiwan. And at the same time, there is, of course, the pressure on the part of Tsai Ing-wen's own party and the civil society that cross-strait exchanges need more accountability, transparency, and consultation with the people.
Joseph Cheng doubts that Taiwan will be able to join the TPP anytime soon, and he says China opposes Taiwan's participation in any international organization with other sovereign states. The Mexican government's dramatic recapture of drug lord Joaquin El Chapo Guzman earlier this month is shining a new spotlight on its handling of the war on illegal narcotics. Rolling Stone magazine's new report that El Chapo met secretly with Hollywood actor Sean Penn and Mexican TV star Kate de Castillo while on the run last October has fueled social media interest in this issue even more. The El Chapo saga was the topic of this week's hashtag VOA program. And host Michael Lippin is right here to share highlights from that show. Michael?
Hi, Jim. Thank you. Well, this week we looked at how social media have responded to El Chapo's recapture and his interview with Sean Penn for Rolling Stone magazine. We had two guests joining us via Skype. From Phoenix, Arizona, we had journalism professor Angela Corcherga, and from Mexico City, we had investigative journalist John Ackerman. Now, during the show, I asked Ackerman whether we learned anything new from Penn's story.
I think Sean Penn's article is very important, particularly because it points to government complicity and the complicity of international corporations with this international business of death and drugs. Sean Penn's very clear about the complicity of the Mexican military with the Chapo Guzman, and also mentions direct statements from Chapo Guzman in which he talks about important multinational corporations who do money laundering for him. That is this is not new information, of course, but one of the reasons why so much attention has been put on Sean Penn and Kate del Castillo is actually an explicit strategy by the Mexican government. The Mexican government announces that not the day they captured him, by the way, on Friday, only once the article comes out, which is the day after, it's Saturday, the capture was on Friday, the article came out on Saturday, and then on Sunday, the Mexican government then starts to push this story that somehow Sean Penn and Kate del Castillo are the responsible ones to deflect attention precisely, which should be on the Mexican government, on U.S. drug users and the United States government, towards this issue of Hollywood stars. During the following days, they let out messages that had been exchanged between Kate del Castillo and El Chapo's lawyer to sort of feed this media frenzy. And yes, I would agree there with Sean Penn when he said that in some ways his article has failed because the attention's all on him and Kate del Castillo, when actually that article and the issues it talks about should lead to serious soul-searching, both in the United States and Mexico.
Angela Cochurga in Phoenix, John was talking about all the corruption issues that are raised with this article, but what about all the violence perpetrated by the cartel, by El Chapo's cartel? That wasn't really covered much in Sean Penn's piece. Do people have a sense that he failed partly in that aspect as well?
Well, he's sad about the state of journalism, but he didn't seem very sad about the countless bodies, the body count that we've seen because of the drug war. Obviously not just the Sinaloa cartel. You know, Chapo says that he only goes after rivals who challenge him, but, you know, having covered in what is multiple mass murders, and I don't want to get too graphic, with just blood running through the streets, it's very difficult to see how he could just say, well, he's a poor farmer who was forced into the drug business, and it's all blamed on U.S. consumption, which is a very, very serious problem. We're not going to downplay that part. But, you know, I've gone to neighborhoods in Juarez after a massacre at a rehab center where young people who were trying to get off of drugs were there trying it as best they could. They were attacked because they had been part of the drug trade. I interviewed a young boy who lost his brother in that massacre, and just a year before I'd lost another brother. And his mother was sobbing inside the house. I mean, there was a real toll. That neighborhood, every single child I talked to in that neighborhood had experienced violence, had lost a parent, had lost a friend, had lost a relative. I went back to check on that young boy. There were no more young boys in that neighborhood. They had either fled or been killed because of this street-level drug violence in Juarez. So there is a real toll, and none of that was touched upon in the article.
Well, if you'd like to hear more of that conversation on the El Chapo saga, just go to our Facebook page, which is called #VOA. Back to you, Jim.
Great program. Thank you so much, Michael, for sharing that with us. And also check it out on our website at voanews.com. You're listening to International Edition. This is VOA.
News is mobile, and so are you. Get VOA on the go. Get VOA on Google Currents. Get VOA News specifically made for your tablet and smartphone. Clean, simple, fast. Now available for Android or Apple phones or tablets. Download the Google Currents app for free today. Get VOA on Google Currents at voanews.com/currents.
For more on the stories you've heard on our radio programs, visit our website at voanews.com. That's where you'll find in-depth reports, related stories, videos, and more from our team of correspondents. Or take the news with you by downloading podcasts of your favorite VOA program. That's at voanews.com.
voanews.com.
Online news for a changing world.
Two rock and roll icons, Sting and Peter Gabriel, have announced a new North American tour together. As International Edition's David Byrd reports, the Rock, Paper, Scissors tour will have the artists performing not only their own music, but also each other's songs.
Sting, once the frontman for The Police and also a highly successful solo artist, is joining forces with Peter Gabriel, who came to fame with Genesis and has also had a very successful solo career. The Rock, Paper, Scissors tour starts June 21st in Columbus, Ohio. Sting told the Associated Press the idea came after his successful world tour with Paul Simon.
Where we traded songs, we traded musicians, we sang together, and the take-home that people got from that was they loved it when we did things together. So I thought, I'd like to do that again. And who would I do it with? And Peter was one of a very short list of people.
This is not the first time the two artists have toured together. The pair toured on the Amnesty Tour in the 1980s. Peter Gabriel says that experience was one of the best tours ever.
We never knew where we were going. We traveled to all sorts of amazing countries, great people, but we had all these fantastic musicians traveling together. There were two planes, one carrying the gear and one carrying musicians. Anyway, so that gave us a sense of what it might be, and it was a lot of fun.
Sting and Peter Gabriel are still working out what they want to play and who will do which songs. But Sting says that both artists know the crowd wants to hear the hits.
I mean, we're in those discussions right now and having ideas of, you know, we want to sing a lot of hits, basically. People want to hear us sing the songs we're famous for. But it's always interesting to trade a song, say, you know, take that one. So I'm not precious about giving him whatever he wants.
Peter Gabriel says he is looking forward to having fun with his friend, just like they did in the 1980s.
It's playful, and I think, yeah, we certainly found when we toured together in the past, there was a lot of, a lot of pillow fights on aeroplanes.
There were pillow fights.
But it was fun. It really was. And there was a lot of great music happening.
And the two artists promise that any disputes on the tour will be settled by the finger-throwing game, which gives it its name, Rock, Paper, Scissors. Though Peter Gabriel says he always waits just a little bit behind his opponent to see what they throw before finalizing his choice. Sting and Peter Gabriel's tour runs through July 25th and ends in Edmonton, Alberta. I'm David Byrd in Washington.
You've been listening to International Edition. You can follow us at voanews.com. Our director is Tracy Carter, our engineer Daryl Smith. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We're so glad you could join us today, and we hope you have a wonderful day. Come back and visit.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
In Libya, the four-year political power struggle following the fall of Muammar Gaddafi's regime split and destabilized the country. On December 17th, UN-facilitated political envoys from Libya's two rival governments and a number of independent political figures signed the Libyan political agreement that will form a unified Libyan government of national accord. Subsequently, the UN Security Council on December 23rd unanimously passed on UN Security Council Resolution 2259, welcoming the formation of the new government of national accord and sending a clear message that this unified government will be the sole legitimate government of Libya. The Presidency Council that will lead the new government is currently working actively towards the formation of the new government with the support of the United Nations. To address Libya's threat from ISIL and other terrorist groups, Libya needs a united government. In the past weeks, ISIL-affiliated militants have conducted a number of violent attacks in Libya. In the first week of January, they attempted to capture the Sidra oil port and the nearby oil town of Ras Lanuf, and in the process set fire on a number of oil tanks. On January 7th, a suicide bomber drove a truck into a training camp for Coast Guard cadets. At least 65 people were killed. The United States strongly condemns these attacks and extends its condolences to the families of the victims. Violent extremists, including ISIL-affiliated groups, threaten all Libyans throughout the country. With their attacks on oil fields, they are threatening resources that belong to the Libyan people and that all Libyans must strive to protect for future generations, said State Department spokesperson John Kirby. These incidents stress again the urgent need for Libya's new leaders to formalize the government of national accord, as outlined in the Libyan political agreement. This is a vital step to address the country's critical humanitarian, economic, and security challenges.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. If you have a comment, please write to Editorials, VOA, Washington, D.C., 20237, USA. You may also comment and view all our current editorials at the VOA Editorials homepage.
www.voanews.com/editorials.